This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. From the surface of the planet Earth, we're headed to the spectacular James Webb Space Telescope, and our guide is Bob Zimmerman, who keeps the website Behind the Black. It is happy anniversary Behind the Black, 12 years of watching the birth and the strange progress of the James Webb Telescope through many years and a lot of budgeting. Well, it's in space, and it has now revealed the first images of thousands we're going to see, and they are spectacular. Your subscriptions, your donations are most welcome, because having got the James Webb Telescope this far, we can believe there's much more to learn, and Bob's here to help you understand it. Bob, a very good evening to you. James Webb is working perfectly. What I'm looking at are spectacular images, but my need here is to understand this is infrared science. Why does it look like it's beautiful colors? How is that? Good evening to you, Bob.
Good evening, John. First of all, I must once again thank your listeners for their generous support to Behind the Black. It keeps me from starving to death and allows me to still cover this subject that I love and that your readers, I think, are fascinated by. So what are we looking at with the James Webb Telescope images? As I've said now, for 20 years since they first started to build this thing a long time ago, this is not a replacement for the Hubble Space Telescope. It is not an optical telescope. It's an infrared telescope. It is optimized very specifically to do deep space cosmology, to look at the very earliest universe where most of the light has shifted into the infrared, so therefore you can't see it in an optical telescope, and to try to help answer some questions about the origins of the universe. Did a Big Bang happen? If it did, how did it happen? What were the components? Are the present theories correct? That's what it's optimized for. So all images are infrared. However, it is a telescope that can look at things with a very big mirror. So it has a really good resolution for infrared astronomy. And so it can look at things other than deep space cosmology. And these initial images released this week are an example of that. The first image they released right off the bat was Webb's first deep space image. This is a case where they looked at a specific speck of sky about the size of a grain of sand, looked at from about 6 feet away. And they kept the telescope aimed at that spot for a very long time to try to get as much photon light from that spot as possible. Hubble did this a number of times. The images were always amazing because in this tiny speck that looked blank to most of the telescopes, Hubble would find hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of galaxies. Well, Webb has done the same thing and has found the same thing, and it's done a little bit more. We don't have all the details yet. It kind of looks like a Hubble deep field, but it isn't the same thing. It's infrared light, and what they do is they assign false colors to different wavelengths within the infrared band. You know, just like blue is short wavelength and red is long wavelength and everything in between is different increments thereof, they'll do the same thing within the infrared bands that Webb looks at. They'll divide between the long and the short wavelengths and give them colors. And they'll probably give them colors corresponding from blue short to red long in the infrared. So this is false color images. So that's the first image. That deep space image shows it shows evidence of microlensing from a gravitational lens, distorted galaxies. It also is looking at a big galaxy cluster, which is what causes the distortion. And it's giving us a hint of what the science coming out of Webb will be when it starts to look at other things. And the other four images they released the next day are examples of that. I highlighted on Behind the Black one, which is a look at a planetary nebula called the Southern Ring Nebula. It's a ring, and it's a planetary nebula. And I haven't dug up the Hubble images of this, but I'm sure there are some really beautiful Hubble images. But this is now looking at this object in infrared, and the infrared looks through the dust and can see things that the optical and some other infrared can't see. And one of the things one of Webb's cameras picked up was the second star in this binary system. We always knew there are suspicions that most planetary nebula are created by binary stars that kind of act like mixmasters that mix and churn up the dust that surrounds the star to create these beautiful shapes. And this, the web image, one of its cameras in different infrared frequency was able to see that second star. And you can see that in this image. And they have another image, not an image, but they then took also spectroscopic data in the infrared of a nearby star that has a known exoplanet. And the exoplanet, they were able to detect undeniably water in its atmosphere from that image. And they also took images of the Carina Nebula, which is where there's a lot of star formation going on in our galaxy, as well as what they call Stevens Quintet, which is a quintet, which is a collection of five galaxies very close together, and they got a really good picture of that. Once again, this is infrared. It's going to tell us different things than the optical would, and it's going to be pretty cool, and there's going to be a lot of data. I guarantee you that there are astronomers worldwide panting at the bit to get at Webb to take images of objects they've been studying for decades to get a look at it with this camera and its infrared technology. It'll tell them things. It'll answer a lot of the questions they have, and of course, produce more questions that they didn't have, and that's the whole point of doing this kind of thing.
Hot gas giant exoplanet WASP 96b, atmosphere composition. Did we know that there was water vapor or water H2O in the atmosphere of gas giants? Was that a known fact? And they were
Hubble had used its high resolution capabilities, and it had some infrared capability to get spectroscopy that suggested water and other chemicals in the atmosphere of exoplanets. But what Webb is going to do is going to widen our abilities here. You get a larger range of spectroscopy across more wavelengths at a higher resolution, especially that's important for looking at exoplanets, which are really faint and small and difficult to see the transits thereof. And so this is just going to widen the capabilities and make it possible to find out more about other exoplanets that before we didn't have the capability of doing. And on top of that, John, forget about just its abilities that widen our capabilities. We now have two telescopes that can do this. It's increasing the number, the amount of capability, just simply in terms of numbers. The more space telescopes you have, the more you can really learn really effectively. It's much better than having them on the ground, without question.
The Nature report on this, the spectrum of this gas giant shows the distinct signature of water and evidence of clouds and haze. So we're looking at an atmosphere that is not alien to our atmosphere, maybe a different composition, but it has water vapor in its atmosphere. It has an atmosphere and it's water vapor. We're going to find this routinely then, Bob, right?
A lot of planets don't have water. They have other things instead. So what's going to happen is the telescope will allow astronomers to begin to map out, characterize the makeup and of the known exoplanets. Not completely, but we will begin to get a better handle of what is out there, right, and therefore begin to understand it. That's just one component of the many things. And once again, I don't particularly assign Webb. Webb is another instrument in orbit, another tool for doing this kind of thing. And that's what it's going to be able to do, and that's what's exciting.
We're going to Bennu and OSIRIS-REx because there are observations about what an asteroid represents. A rubble pile, we've called it in the past.
Yes, this is a confirmation of a story we actually talked about last week. The scientists had looked at a crater on Bennu and determined that this rubble pile of material has so little cohesion that when something impacts the surface, things don't fly away. They can't transfer the impact to nearby particles very well, so they basically just float up a little bit and then avalanche downward. In other words, the rubble pile doesn't have a lot of cohesion. Well, the OSIRIS-REx team did an analysis, a close analysis about what happens when they grabbed their sample. They did the touch-and-go sample grab. When that happened, the grabber sunk into the surface of the asteroid by 1.5 feet, more than they expected it would. In fact, had they not fired the thrusters, it would have kept going down. Well, they looked at that data, and this data confirms what that other study had found, that that this rubble pile has very little cohesion. They equate it to more like a playground ball pit you find in amusement parks. You know, the ones that kids can jump into a pile of balls, and it's almost like being in a liquid. Well, that's pretty much what this is. That's what this rubble pile is like. It doesn't have, the pieces are there floating together, but they are not really linked very well together, and so therefore something go into them. And a lot of this data comes from looking at the post crater that was created by the touch and go sample grab, as well as the thrusters when they pulled away. It was much bigger than expected, and they went much deeper than expected. And so rubble piles are very much like ball pits. Well, think about it. A ball pit coming down to hit the earth, John. How would you destroy it? And really, is it a threat anyway? Maybe it'll just break up and burn up. This is the interesting component of this story, John.
We go to a galaxy that looks very much like, you know, when you take a sparkler at July 4th and wave it in the air and make little circles? That's what this galaxy looks like. But the reason Bob has it here is because he wants to give attention to good old Hubble. Isn't that it, Bob?
No, this is a cool image. Cool images are cool images. It doesn't matter whether they come from Webb or Hubble. And just because Webb is around doesn't mean that we're not getting cool images from other sources. So we got a lot of cool images for the rest of this segment, John. Your analogy of a sparkler is a great idea. You know, if you take a picture but you keep the shutter open and someone moves the sparkler around, it'll produce these wonderful lines on the image. And that's kind of what this is, because these streams that surround this distorted galaxy are literally the result of a merger going on, and as the merger happens, material gets trailed behind and produces these streams, and it's just, as I say, a cool image. This is also an image picked by the public. The public, they have a project with Hubble whereby the public can look through the archive, find interesting objects, and vote on which ones they think Hubble should do a high-resolution image of, and this is one of them. It's about a half a billion light years away, and it's cool. That's all I'll say that.
To the surface of Mars and more construction because of this strange gravity. Is that why I'm looking at these lacy rocks?
These lacy rocks, and we've had others before. This is by Curiosity on the slopes, on the foothills mountains of Gale Crater. And it's partly because of weak gravity. It's partly because of weak, thin atmosphere. That atmosphere is enough to erode this material, but it's not so violent to break it. So you get these incredibly long flakes that extend out inches way and thin, and you couldn't have this on Earth on the surface. Absolutely not. So yes, it's partly the weak gravity allows things to be weak that can stand up, and it also allows the atmosphere is weak enough to cause erosion, but not enough strong enough to break these things. And there's also the geology, John. There's geology going on here that's not found on Earth, and the image is just incredible. I found it on Curiosity's webpage. It's not published anywhere else because they get too many of these, and I just put it on Behind the Black.
We go to the North Pole of Mars, and Bob, is the North Pole, the South Pole of Mars as important for colonies as the moon's south pole, or is it a different planet?
No, they're not as important because on a planet like Mars, the poles are going to be a more hostile environment. And you don't have to go to the poles of Mars to find water. There's plenty of water at much lower latitudes, 30 degrees, 35 degrees. Why go to the poles then? But you need to understand the history geologically of Mars to really understand the planet and to explore and colonize it. And what the poles do is they teach us that. And this picture, cool image I have on Behind the Black, was posted by the science team for the high-resolution camera recently, and it's a beautiful image of the many, 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 many layers that exist within the North Pole, and the evidence they give us of the cyclical nature of Mars climate. The number of layers, once again, indicates many cycles and many geological, repeating geological processes that lay down the surface as we see it today. And that's going to tell us a lot in the long run about how Mars has been in the past and how it will be in the future.
Bob Zimmerman, happy birthday. Bob Zimmerman's Behind the Black, taking us to Mars and then to a galaxy that looks like a sparkler swirling at July 4th. And then, of course, to the images coming from the Webb telescope. We're going to space engineering next. There's news from Boca Chica. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.